The next day, the caravan crawling southwest along the old highway was outnumbered by those following it. The Santo Domingans never interfered with the soldiers, though Valentine expected that his men dropped back into their mass to distribute food and water, especially to the children. If they made it to the coast, it would be with an emptier belly and a tighter belt around it. If there was a bright side, it was that from a distance, his column would be mistaken for an army moving down the road, occupying miles of trail. With Monte Cristi's riders and the Grogs leaving the column on excursions to set fire to roadside police stations, gather weapons and ammunition, and cut down telephone wires, the Currians farther east might be convinced their border garrisons had collapsed and an invading host was pouring out of Haiti. In the intervening days, Valentine might have a chance to slip away in the confusion without further battle. Adding to this belief was the fact that the Currians had already instituted a scorched earth policy as he moved east. They found fewer and fewer stations and plantations intact. Villages were burned and supplies destroyed or removed, adding to his logistics worries. They were beyond the zone where Cercado's road-watching network had stashed food, and while water was plentiful, grain was running out for the horses, and food became short for the men. Valentine reduced some of his problems by ordering the slaughter of a few broken-down pack animals when they camped that night, the second since leaving the armory at San Jose, sharing the ample meat out to the cooking pots of those trailing the convoy. Cercado joined Valentine and Anca at their cooking fire, appearing as he always did with his mixture of good news and bad. Their guide smoked a cigar, sending satisfied puffs skyward with his back against a palm.
The rumors you spread about an attack on Santo Domingo have come back to bite you, Captain Valentine. Yes, it has scared the Currians for now, but they are mustering forces west and east. These people have heard that the campaign against the island under Port-au-Prince has been called off and their general is marching east to crush you. Even larger forces will come soon from the west.
How soon?
Impossible to say. You must travel faster once you make the turn for the coast. They may move to anticipate you.
Valentine looked into the fire. There had been delays almost from the first minute. How many were due to his faulty planning? How many to bad execution? His quick raid into the Currian zone to test the quickwood weapons and get more arms for the Haitians had succeeded in the first task. He had seen how effective the wood was with his own eyes. The second, while not being a total failure, had come far short of expectations. And now it looked as if the column would be swallowed entirely.
You've done all we asked superbly, Cercado. We're almost to the road to the sea. You and your family members should slip away now and go back to your mountains. Take whatever weapons you wish. Even some of those from the Thunderbolt. It's the least we can do for you.
Captain, Santo Domingo has not seen the like of this in many years. Such a rising will come to a bad end, or a good one. Either way, it will be the subject for tales and songs that the peons of this island will tell long after I die, even should God grant me a life 100 years long. What man, if he is a man, would not want to be part of it? Even now, the poor peons call you Revenant. They say that a reaper had you in its arms, but before it could bite you, you bit it, killing it. They say when you are wounded, you cut the body parts from your enemies and meld them with your own. Such tales are told of you. It curls the hair on my toes. I will tell you something else. The smokes you saw on the horizon today, they are not just Jacques riders. They are the peons fighting on their own. The countryside has risen. They've borne evil after evil too long. The men are sending their women and children to you for safety, while they take to the hills.
I thought it odd that there were so many women among them, my David.
This has been a long time coming. The Domingan rulers left a hollow egg when they called away so many to fight against Cui and Haiti. It only took your footsteps to break the shell. Who knows? Maybe in other parts of the island, as they gather men to crush you, other peons can take their chances. At the very least, the trade in sugar and rubber to their brothers in the north will be reduced for some time. Both require many men. If the Currians kill those who rise, who will take their place in the cane fields and tapping rubber trees?
We're already overdue at the coast. We should have been there today. At this rate, we'll be 2 more days on the road.
Do we dare travel at night? A final sprint, tonight and tomorrow, And the devils get the hind end?
Devil take the hindmost is how we usually say it, old horse.
He pictured the island in his mind, the various forces moving.
We'll get to the coast, all right.
He rose from the fire and went to find Post. In the end, the Grogs' skill as pig hunters saved the column. The stations along the road relied on pig flesh to feed their soldiers, and to a lesser extent, the workers, and as Valentine's columns approached, they emptied their pig pens and drove the pigs into the brush. The Grogs had noses to rival Valentine's own, and they tracked the future chops and side meat to their hiding places. The dust-raising column developed a system in which the front end would take the meat and begin boiling it or roasting it, and by the time the tail of the column passed the fires, the meat was ready to be eaten at the next rest halt by those hundreds upon hundreds bringing up the rear. Men, some of them armed, began to join the column from east, west, and north, telling tales of horsemen closing on the column from the barren stretches and the more arid regions of the island neighboring the well-watered river valley. More formations followed, bearing artillery and armed vehicles, according to some of the tales. Valentine put Monte Cristi in charge of adding the best armed and healthiest of them to his own units, though there wasn't time for anything other than teaching them the system of moving for an hour and then resting for 10 minutes. Valentine was grateful for the additions. Post had gone pell-mell to the coast with the Thunderbolt's marines and sailors in the battle truck to prepare for the column's arrival. By midday, they turned south for the coast, moving on a smaller, less used road. Valentine hoped that the change in direction would throw off any designs for the column's destruction. He managed to get his charges a few miles south of the old highway by moving on into the evening. When he finally called for a halt, the men dropped in their tracks under the bright Caribbean stars. Few of his soldiers rode. Valentine had turned space in the trucks over to the ill, weak, and pregnant of the column. Even so, there were those who turned off the road throughout the day to rest in the shade, and they would probably never catch up now. Smaller bands of Santo Domingan horsemen had appeared as it got dark atop the distant hilltops, marking his turn to the coast. Valentine found Monte Cristi in the center of a circle of his chieftains.
Ever fought a rearguard action, Jacques?
Christie's eyes lit up.
My men have performed many an ambush. We run all the better afterwards, knowing we've hurt them.
Valentine smelled the pork being roasted by Monte Cristi's cook and his mouth watered, but he ignored his hunger. This was the final sprint, and there was too much to do.
Just hit them fast and keep moving for the coast. I'm afraid they've guessed we've changed direction. They might try to cut us off from the bay. We have to beat them to it.
We could, if we could empty the trucks of everything but the supplies. My men could march through the night.
Valentine looked out at the sea of Santo Domingans sheltering behind the pickets.
A lot of these people can't. They joined us out of belief in some stories we spread.
You did not ask them to come. They must accept the fortunes of war. Not one in five of them will fit on your ship, even if they do make it to the bay. They will be no worse off than if we had never come here. Otherwise, you will be asking my men to die for nothing.
You've seen how things are run here, Jacques. They've thrown in with us. We're their only chance.
They knew the risk when they ran away.
But that's just it. They haven't run away. They've run toward something. The chance at a free life. I would no more leave them behind than you'd leave those men you were stuck in the cave with.
I will tell you something, Carrigan. There were times, yes, there were many times in that hole after it was sealed that I would have turned them all over to the Carrigans for fresh air, sun, and a real meal. I prayed for the chance.
Valentine made a show of fishing around in his bag for a strip of dried beef so that he would not see the tears on Monte Cristi's face. The moon rose, and the drivers loaded their vehicles once more with those who had to ride. Monte Cristi handed Valentine his horse's reins.
Ride today, Captain. I'll be afoot with my man in the rear. It will do everyone good to be able to see you. His name is Luke, and like me, he is a defector from the Currians. He is strong enough to bear even your oversized friend on these mountains. Take care of him, should I fall.
Valentine read the expression in Monte Cristi's face and nodded dumbly. He cinched the saddle on the speckled gray gelding. He slung his submachine gun, grabbed a handful of mane, and mounted. Luke heaved a sigh and pawed at the earth, eager to be off.
Any sign of our pursuers?
No. For now, they just watch.
Build up the fires as we go. I want them to burn for a few more hours at least. Take care of yourself. Dinner tonight with me on the ship.
I look forward to it.
Let's get everyone moving.
Valentine rode at the head of the column, just behind the rear guard. He had contracted the mass of soldiers and civilians as much as possible, but the troops at his disposal could hardly watch the front and flanks, let alone defend them with so many men detached for the rear guard. They made good time, despite the dark. When his sensitive nose picked up the smell of the sea, Valentine's heart leapt. He began to trot his horse up and down the column, urging the weary walkers on as best he could. Everyone seemed to sense that it was time for the last sprint. The grogs at the head of the column scouted and helped the pioneers with the worst parts of the road by cutting down trees into washouts so the trucks could cross. Valentine followed with a vanguard of armed men watching at all times as the others worked. He needed at least a small group of disciplined men to be ready for any emergency. Then came the overloaded trucks, the valves on the aged engines clattering in complaint. A few men traveled to either side of the road, visible through the scarcer vegetation in this more arid region of the island. Interspersed with the trucks, ready to give a shove, came the masses of Santo Domingans with their children and bundles in tow, hardly a goat remaining. Somewhere behind, more refugees followed, covered by Monte Cristi's rearguard, composed of his most reliable men with the best weapons. Valentine had enough on his mind, worrying about how he would find space, not to mention food, for perhaps 2,000 extra mouths on the ride home without the Kurians intervening. Which, of course, they did, just short of his goal. The dark of the road ahead burst into muzzle flashes. An automatic weapon swept the road, scattering both his men and the formation of pioneers. The Kurian soldiers were dispersed on the crest of a hill ahead. Valentine could see the vast night out there, between the folds of the earth, and cursed. Stopped. The grogs came stumbling back, one wounded. Valentine led Monte Cristi's horse into a gully sheltering his soldiers.
They must have just beaten us there, my David. They are not dug in. They stand behind rocks and trees, or lie on the ground. It is just a screen, I think.
But it's a well-placed screen. And where the bugs?
If the pioneers charge too...
There'll be that many more dead men. Any idea where their flank is?
No.
Another hour, I bet they have twice as many men. Give me your rifle. If we can at least get the automatic weapon.
Anka took his submachine gun.
Give the word, and we will go, my David.
Valentine's own men began shooting back at the soldiers ahead, and a slow, popping firefight took place and grew as both sides' soldiers gathered at the gunfire. Neither side seemed to have ammunition to waste. With no targets, the automatic weapon was silent. Valentine adjusted the slide on the gun's rear sight.
Anka, I have a great favor to ask.
I know, my David. I will break for those rocks.
Anka ran forward in the low, loping run of the grogs, using his hands and feet. The machine gun fired, and Valentine's cat eyes picked up the source. He placed the flange of the front sight on what he hoped was ahead. He squeezed, and the heavy grog gun kicked out its 50 caliber shell. He slid back into the gully. The Haitian at his right lifted his head.
You got him!
Keep...
Valentine saw the man's hair rustle as if a brush had been run upward through it, and he slumped. Valentine slid over to the corpse and passed the rifle to a sheltering pioneer. Valentine heard a whistling sound, then... An explosion lit the night at the crest of the enemy hillside. He slid sideways for a better view and was rewarded by the sight of a second shell bursting on the crest, right in the middle of the road where the machine gun had been placed.
That's naval gunfire.
My David, it's the thunderbolt!
The sky began to turn orange, and somewhere in the distance a rooster crowed. Valentine heard shooting far behind. The rear guard was contesting the road with their pursuers. Valentine took to his horse. They would not be ringed in.
Over the hill and to the sea, men! To the sea! Sur la mer!
Valentine handed the grog gun to one of Anka's warriors. Anka's grogs went up and over the edge of the gully, their shotguns and rifles flaring in the half-light. There were no bayonets to glint in the rising sun, but the ivory in their oversized teeth shone. The trucks gunned their engines and kicked up gravel from the road. Valentine passed on Cobb. His friend sprayed the roadblock ahead with bullets from the PPD. The charging Grogs to either side made for an odd sight, going forward with two legs and an arm, almost like horses cantering. Valentine considered drawing his blade for effect, but the Haitians and Grogs needed no urging. He pulled his Colt automatic instead, and briefly wondered how he would work the slide and keep atop of the galloping horse. The Santo Domingans did not wait to meet them. The sight and sound of charging Grogs amidst the Thunderbolt shellfire proved too much for the thin line of riflemen. Valentine was cheered by the sight of knapsacks bobbing in the tall grass of the hillside as the Santo Domingans ran. At the roadblock, he saw dead men heaped by the machine gun as the horse jumped the felled tree. Valentine heard shots from the fishing village at the base of the hill and saw the Thunderbolt's Marines deployed in a skirmish line advancing up the hill. Post, evidently trapped with his little contingent in the seaside fishing village, had heard the firing and acted. The Santo Domingan soldiers surrendered or scattered, and the rout was complete. Valentine swore to himself that he would see Post made into an officer in Southern Command if they ever made it back to the Free Territory. As the column got moving again, Valentine reproached himself for jumping his horse into the most likely spot for another shell from the Thunderbolt. But in his later years, that was forgotten when he remembered the pure glory of that moment, his first battlefield victory in 8 years of soldiering. Valentine saw boats drawn up on the beach to either side of the village under the guard of a sailor or two. Valentine had dispatched Post to the rendezvous with orders to gather every available craft, using the Thunderbolt's forbidding bulk, if necessary, to confiscate a flotilla of fishing boats. Using all the Thunderbolt's deck space and a few large boats in tow, he hoped to get his charges along the coast. It would be another long day while they loaded and supplied all the boats, but he had learned to expect nothing less. By sunset, after an endless afternoon spent turning chaos into order, Valentine stood on the Thunderbolt's bridge in clean clothes with a hot meal inside him. The Santo Domingan refugees were crowded on board every seaworthy vessel. Monte Cristi's rear guard had tumbled down from the hills into the Thunderbolt's motorized boats, covered by cannon and Orlikon. Last of all came Post's Marines, setting fire to the huts of the village to add covering smoke to the debarkation. But new worries replaced the old. Their cockle-shell flotilla could fit the Haitian soldiers and Santo Domingans just. But any kind of bad weather would lead to the possible loss of the boats and perhaps the overcrowded Thunderbolt. The Curians in Santo Domingo had a few ships as well, mostly armed merchantmen that ran sugar and rubber and ore north. Any exchange of gunfire would be fatal to many of those crowding on the Thunderbolt's decks. Waiting in the bay while they captured better vessels from other villages was out of the question. The Curian forces had already gathered, lobbing mortar shells into the water as the Thunderbolt towed the boats out to sea. Two single-masted fishing ships plotted alongside, reeking holds filled with mobs of huddled people. Dozens more stood forlornly on the shoreline. He unburdened his concerns on the one who knew the waters best.
Don't worry about the weather.
Carrasca's hair blew out in the fresh Caribbean breeze, just as it had that first morning taking the captured ship into Jamaica. The helmsman ignored them.
We have a few weeks left before worrying about real storms.
We have to get farther off the coast. 2 or 3 miles at least. They might have guns mounted.
Let it go, David. We're at sea. My element, remember? Let me do the thinking for a while. You've done brilliantly. Maybe not what you set out to do, but it was the right choice in the end.
I should,
Sleep. That's an order.
Captain's word at sea is law.
Her mock-serious attitude vanished. She glanced onto the bridge and stepped into his arms. He couldn't tell who started it, but they were kissing.
Sleep with me. Soon. When we get back to Jamaica. After we see all this through.
She broke off the embrace, leaving his body tingling.
Enough. You see, I take my duty as seriously as you. Tempting as the thought is.
She looked at his crotch and then returned her eyes to his. She no longer watched him with that wary hint of fear that his pupils might be glowing. Valentine, too aroused to feel embarrassed, saluted.
It's a date.
He moved past her to leave the bridge.
I'll be in my cabin, if There's room to sleep between post and Anka, that is.
He allowed his hand to trace the firm course of her buttock and thigh as he passed, puckishly wanting her to be as aroused as he. Sure enough, Anka lay on the floor, still smelling of gun smoke. Post occupied his cot, having fallen into bed still in uniform. Post reeked of sweat and wood smoke, blood and gun oil, tide water and pig fat. Valentine did not have to hypersensitize his nose to smell the story of his lieutenant's day. Valentine stepped over Anka and managed to get his boots off before falling into a dreamless sleep. A hand shook him awake. Valentine's nose told him it was Cercado before he was even partly awake.
Captain, it is Monte Cristi. Come, please.
Valentine rose out of bed, wide awake, but with the weighed down feeling of a rushed awakening.
What's that?
He followed Cercado out of the door and down the short companionway to the officer's mess. Monte Cristi sat up, held in the arms of one of his chieftains, some of his soldiers clustered in the doorway.
Make a hole, damn it!
Valentine pushed into the compartment.
Jacques, what is it? A seizure?
Monte Cristi looked up, wincing.
My heart, I think, David.
He fainted away twice. We gave him some wine to ease the pain.
Valentine dashed back to his cabin, forcing his way past Anka's companionway filling bulk.
My David?
He tore through his footlocker and came up with a bottle of white tablets.
Aha!
He rushed back to the mess.
Water, someone.
Valentine put four white tablets into Monte Cristi's mouth.
It is ironic, David. In hours of bullets flying around me, shells even. I've been on the run all day, and the moment I get to rest...
He shrugged, forcing a smile.
My heart chooses to kill me.
He shut his eyes, and Valentine patted his hand until he opened them again.
We fooled them, going to sea like that.
The Kurians forgot that the ocean is also a road.
A good joke.
Yes, and we'll be laughing about it for weeks. Over rum in your mountains.
I...
All of a sudden, Monte Cristi simply faded. Valentine thought he had gone to sleep, but when he felt for a pulse, there was nothing.
Fuck!
Valentine lowered Monte Cristi to the deck.
It's a good heart, Jacques. It just needs some help. Anka! Get out of here! Everyone clear the floor!
He forgot to speak French, but his gestures served. Anka entered. Valentine put an ear to Jacques' breast, listening for a beat. Nothing.
Push on his chest, like this.
Valentine demonstrated, and Anka's thick shoulders went to work, the grog's four-fingered hands on Monte Cristi's breastbone. Valentine pinched off his nose and breathed as Anka worked.
Perhaps.
His eyes fluttered, and he looked more alert.
Why am I on the floor?
Relax. Don't try to talk.
The rest of the voyage, Monte Cristi's health consumed Valentine's attention to the point where he actually forgot about the Thunderbolt, Carrasca, the Santo Domingans and their flimsy boats, and the weather. He knew time passed only from the growth of his beard and an occasional look out the window. He fed Monte Cristi aspirin at each small meal and watched a little of his strength return.
I feel used up.
Monte Cristi was sitting in a canvas chair on the shady side of the deck as the coast slid by.
More so than before. But I will say this. Life is sweet now. It wasn't before. The past died the other day. Now, I make my own future free of it.
Your days of carrying a rifle are over. Sit on a beach from now on. Learn to fish.
Why all this concern for a worn-out old man?
Perhaps...
Valentine struggled for the right words, and would have struggled no matter what language he was using.
Perhaps what?
The man was beyond pretense, in himself or others.
Perhaps because I see you as one possible me in 30 years. Also, I didn't want an old enemy to lay his hands on you.
Who? I thought you had not been to our land before.
Death. The Grim Reaper, chief of all the others. When we got on board, I figured we left Death back on shore. Turned out he followed. Bastard's never satisfied. He wants more every chance he gets. So every chance I get, I kick him in the teeth. Sooner or later, one of us is gonna give up. It won't be me.
Free Haiti, July. It is easy to believe in spirits in the mountains of Haiti when the misted woods press close all around. Groaning sounds that cannot be birds, yet should not be trees, echo through the night air. Even a trained ear finds them impossible to place. According to voodooists, waterfalls and streams are favorite haunts of the spirits. When you come across a mountainside waterfall, cascading down a rocky cliff like a splashing staircase, you get the feeling of being the first to lay eyes on it since the forming of the world. It becomes easy to imagine it consecrated by apparitions dancing in the mist as the shafts of sunlight strike them. Then a dragonfly with a hand-sized wingspan whirs by, or a parade of ants crosses a route in a chitin stream, and the spell is broken. The forest is just a forest, and the water is just water again. Until later, when the body is elsewhere, and the beauty of the place weaves its magical spell, knitting memory and imagination. The roots rejoice at the return of her warriors in sacred ceremony and profane revelry. Valentine watched the sacred portion from a moss-hided rock, dew-dusted ferns brushing at his frame. Soldiers and civilians gathered at a waterfall in the forested hills, led in singing by their priests. Narcisse sat on a rock in the swirling waters at the base of the waterfall, like the statue of the Little Mermaid, calling the men to her one at a time to receive a cleansing dip in the river. Other voodooists escorted the supplicants into the water, or sang hosannas in the background. Part baptism, part absolution, and part bath, the ritual moved Valentine. There was none of the solemnity of Father Max's traditional Catholic ceremonies. The participants and audience laughed and encouraged each other through catcalls. The grogs sat high on the hillside, chewing fruit and watching the human performance below as if from balcony seating. Further above, Anka stood sentinel with crossbow and gun, a watchful set of eyes allowing the humans to relax below. Valentine, by nature an observer rather than a participant at this sort of display, sat on his rock with Carrasca resting on a patch of grass beside him, dappling sun setting her hair agleam. By nature scientifically minded, a few years ago he might have thought the whole performance silly animism. But Valentine had seen too much of the inexplicable since beginning his journeys to laugh anything off. He applauded when Monte Cristi waded into the stream. Narcisse took extra time over him, either through concern over his frailty or giving the spirits ample opportunity to work their magic. The aged hero was the last of the spiritual bathers. Some of the Thunderbolt's sailors and marines shuffled forward, and finally Post went through the ceremony. He emerged from his dunking and beckoned Valentine to join him.
Come on, Val. It's cooler than the jungle.
He and Carrasca exchanged shrugs, and Valentine stripped to applause from all. A few pointed at the white pock left by the old bullet wound on his leg. Narcisse laid her hands on him, reciting something that sounded like mixed French and Latin. Valentine lowered himself at her command. Valentine felt refreshed, if not strengthened or healed. He waded back to the shore. He reached for his clothes, but Carrasca snatched them up.
I don't think you're through yet. Do you see anyone else getting dressed?
There were more sing-song chants, and the returning warriors lined up to walk naked back to the village. Valentine joined in the lines. The Grog scrambled down from their rocky balconies to follow. Karaska fell into step next to him.
How'd you get the leg wound?
Up in Nebraska, acting like a damn fool.
A damn fool who saved my people.
Your people saved themselves, but it was years ago. I'll take sea duty anytime. Fewer 40-mile days.
You'd cover 40 miles in a day? On horseback?
On foot. It was common in the wolves. We weren't so special. 200 years ago, Zulu armies in Africa could run 50 in a day.
They came to the village near the spirit spot, a trailside cluster of shacks painted and decorated in bright colors. Dancing red figures, green snakes, blue birds, and less recognizable patterns wound around door frames, roofs, and windows in the Haitian style. Tables and barrels heaped with food and drinks stood in the doorways and alleys. Musicians drummed a tattoo on hollow logs and ancient plastic pails, calling all together. The spectators ate and drank with enthusiasm. Handsome Haitian women poured rum and juice into wooden tumblers, which were emptied as quickly as they could be filled. Just outside the village, a rivulet emptied into a field of clay-colored mud. A shaman brought them to the edge of the water. He began to shout imprecations to Haiti's enemies. Valentine understood just enough to know he called on the warriors to be armed and shielded in new spirit.
Liberté ou la mort!
Monte Cristi belly flopped into the mud. He rolled around until he was well coated. His men followed, eager as overheated elephants to go into a cool wallow.
Go on, boy. Take on Ogun's armor.
Valentine bit off a response about Ogun's armor not doing pigs a hell of a lot of good. He stuck a foot in the mud. It did feel cool and inviting between the toes.
Come on!
The men dived in with the Haitians. Soon it was almost impossible to tell black skin from white, or grog skin for that matter, as all were covered in the grayish plaster. Valentine, grinning behind the mask of mud, rose and advanced on Karaska in a threatening crouch. She began to back away.
Oh no, I'll never get it out of my...
He clasped her around the chest and dragged her into the mud. He flopped into the morass, and she landed astride him.
Bastard!
She flung a wet handful of soil down at him.
At least you were undressed.
I'll wash them myself.
Valentine watched her bind her partially despoiled hair up in a bandana and pull off her shirt with muddy fingers. Her shorts followed. She pinned him into the wallow with a knee, her eyes wide and hot. He felt her take his head in her hands, and she kissed him, pressing against his body tightly enough to squeeze mud out from the join where their bodies met. When she came up for air, he saw her nipples hard beneath their gray coating. Sailors, Marines, and Haitians followed his example, grabbing women out of the hooting crowd and pulling them into the mud. A few ran or struggled, laughing all the time, but the only screams were ones of delight as the men planted muddy kisses on flushed cheeks, necks, and breasts. Valentine rolled Karaska over and kissed her, and then she returned the move. When their lips finally parted, she was on top again. She looked around at the muddy figures dancing, playing, and making love.
You've started an orgy, Captain. I don't know what I think about an officer that lets his men get out of hand like this.
Valentine cupped her buttocks.
I'll let them be. My hands are rather full of something else at the moment.
Is that some kind of crack?
He explored further with his fingers.
No, but this is.
Another bad joke like that, and a certain marine of my acquaintance won't get his brains fucked out momentarily.
We'll talk some more in the bushes.
Valentine picked himself up and offered a hand.
Your tongue's going to be busy elsewhere.
He slapped her mud-covered buttock and followed her into the forest, first running and then walking, until they splashed across the stream and found a clearing, a field next to an abandoned hut, perhaps a former garden. Long grasses and palmettos had supplanted the rich soil's food crops. Valentine was in no mood to search for the perfect glade, especially with Karaske exploring his hardness from behind, using it like a divining rod to find a spot to make love. They sank to their knees, tongues exploring one another's mouths. He found mudless patches of her body to kiss and explored the rest of her coated skin with his hands.
Val.
Valentine pressed her into his arms. She sank limp to the ground. He lay next to her, cradling her and running his hands up and down her body, lingering at her inner thighs. His mouth explored where his fingers left off, and she again took his head in her hands. She pressed her mons up to his mouth. The salty, sweet feminine musk hardened him beyond self-control, and he rose up from her sex and positioned himself between her legs. He felt her open for him, and he moved inside her, everything inside her, warm and wet and magic. Her face grew contorted as he moved in her, ever deeper and faster as their passion waxed. He shut his eyes, lost in his own sensations, yet still aware of her. He felt an irresistible toboggan ride rush of pleasure, and the draining spasms came. They drowsed away a few moments in each other's arms, tingling as if joined by a low-voltage circuit. Valentine could feel the matted down grass beneath his back.
Another kick in the teeth.
Huh?
For death. There's more than one way to strike a blow for life.
She furrowed her brows, and then evidently gave up trying to figure out what he was talking about. Her hand explored him.
Blow for life. And they say men don't come with instructions.
She moved downward. Tongue and mouth, passionately applied, worked a resurrection.
That's the spirit.
She straddled him, coming up for more than air. The Haitians showed their gratitude when it came time to fill the Thunderbolt with quickwood and provisions. Anka and his grogs supervised the cutting and milling of some of the trees into usable lengths. Smaller saplings were gently extracted by shovel, placed in clay cauldrons, or wrapped in layers of dirt and burlap, and ported down to the beach one at a time. As a final gift during a visit to the beach, Papa Legba gave the entire ship's crew each a leather tobacco pouch with a handful of seeds for new quickwood trees.
Kerr is a dry place. These will remain dormant for years if kept out of your sun, until placed in moist soil. They grow slowly, so have patience. Let the wood mature, and take only branches if you must.
We'll see they end up in the right hands. Perhaps someday you'll come north and see the groves yourself.
No. I'll stay in the warmth and the growing gardens. In a cold climate, I doubt I could survive a winter without a different means of support.
Well, maybe cows would do. Or pigs.
You still do not understand, do you, Valentine? It is the sapient mind that gives us the kind of vital aura infusion that truly satisfies. Each aura has a different flavor. A man enduring hideous tortures. A woman desperate to save her offspring. A terrified child taken in the night all have a distinct feel when absorbed. The rush, as you might call it, varies. An aura can be consumed in the time it takes to scream, or over the course of many painful hours. There were times when my...
Point taken.
Valentine instinctively balled his fists.
I forget my manners. Would one discuss cuts of meat or beef stew recipes with a group of cattle? Forgive me, son of mine enemy.
Valentine relaxed, but wanted to end the interview.
Perhaps when I'm old and the winters feel too long, I'll come back to the islands.
He met Karaska's eyes across the glare of the sand, and she cupped the leather pouch suggestively.
I'd like to hear more about Kerr and the other planets in the Interworld Tree.
A strong mind is a blessing when the body grows frail. May fortune walk with you, for you'll walk into many lands bereft of it.
He waved in his weary fashion and let his bearers carry him off.
The debt is paid.
At the time, the phrase was just one more curiosity from the enigmatic Kurian. It would be years before Valentine learned its significance. He took his leave of Monte Cristi, sitting at the edge of the beach in a hammock chair, fanning himself.
Did the river and mud cure take, Jacques?
Not as much as Narcisse's cooking. She's a gifted woman. Something for the body, something for the ange. You are wise to offer her a trip north. It is something she has long dreamed of. I also have a message from our friend with the dogs at the Cape. They've fixed the oars in that old submarine. I wouldn't be surprised if your enemy comes looking for you. Though Bull is chafing, he may throw in with us in the end. The Santo Domingans have trouble keeping the last road along the north coast open. With these new guns, the routes have been shooting up their convoys. He senses a change in the wind.
Then I won't worry about Haiti anymore, Jacques. If my old friend Boule is thinking of throwing in with you, you must be sure to win.
Some of our mechanics are making crossbows like those your ape men use, but smaller. Better against the Whisperers than spears.
Valentine walked among Monte Cristi's chieftains and soldiers, thanking them as best he could in Haitian Creole, before returning to Jacques. Their conversation moved on to military technicalities, smothering the goodbye in trivia. Narcisse arrived with an assortment of potted dishes for the officers' mess, bags of provisions, and a chest full of Haitian spices.
Fried plantain, fried pork, a bag of mushroom. They good on everything.
She pointed with her mutilated arm.
Enough fruit to last a long while, fresh and dry. Now the spices.
She continued checking over the contents of her baggage like a marine preparing for a landing on a hostile shore.
I'd have never left that cell if it weren't for you, Narcisse.
And I'd still be getting stains out of Bull's underwear. We help each other, Blanc.
He stepped onto one of the Thunderbolt's launches, Narcisse once again riding in her place on his back. And as it left the beach, Valentine felt sadness and some relief. Relief at the fact that he found on Haiti what he spent over a year getting to. Sadness in saying goodbye to so many of those who risked everything to help him. He turned his body toward the ship, its outline changed by the potted trees lashed everywhere on the decks. The old Thunderbolt looked like a floating forest. The launch hove alongside, and Valentine climbed aboard and reported himself present to the mate on watch. He and some sailors helped Narcisse to the galley, where she sniffed suspiciously at the Jamaican pepper pot the cook's mate was creating in celebration of leaving Hispaniola. Valentine went up on deck and watched the preparations for departure. The motor launch was swung up, and a last few sailors and marines came out to the ship with the Haitians. There were friendly exchanges of cotton ducks for pigskin utility vests, earrings for copper bracelets, and so on over the side of the ship. There would have to be a strict search for smuggled alcohol, and the wearisome task of getting rid of lice and bedbugs, which undoubtedly hitched a ride from the shore. But Valentine could leave those details to Carrasca and her mates. He and Post had to make sure the Marines and Grogs were ready to fight if necessary. The last lap. He needed to get the ship to the Texican coast. His superiors would handle the rest. He would be back to being a cog in a larger machine, rather than the Axis driving the various cogs. Would he miss the taste of independent command he had been given? Being on his own was a banquet of endless servings of stress and headaches, but the freedom added spice to the dishes. Thankfully, for this last voyage, he would not have to turn into Captain Bligh on the Bounty and ask his crew to sacrifice for the cargo. The saplings were hardy enough to survive the short trip across the Caribbean, assuming the Thunderbolt's aged diesels held out, without taxing the ship's freshwater resources. After the challenges of the late months, Valentine was ready to spend a week supervising potted saplings. Anka again quartered his grogs in the forward well deck, their old tentage replaced by a grove of quickwood plants, their crossbows and pikes stored below, shotguns and rifles cleaned and put away in the arms lockers. He wandered among the bunks of the Marines. His complement was already displaying souvenirs acquired on the island, hung upon bunk and locker. Hispaniolan voodoo charms wrought from wood and bead swung with the ship's gentle motion. He returned to the deck for a last look at Haiti. The mountains, so green that the color deserved a richer word to describe it, stood out against the azure blue of the sky and the argent blue of the Caribbean waters below. It was an island of extremes, beauty and hideousness, laughter and despair, freedom and slavery. But from this island that had known an almost endless series of sorrows for the past 600 years, a new world could spring. Narcissa's dishes made a superb dinner, once the cook and his mate let her take over supervision of the meals. Valentine had the galley busy and treated Post and the rest of the Thunderbolt's Marines to a feast. Good food and plentiful tobacco, all as night fell after an easy day's duties, made the men lively.
How's life in the Ozarks? I've heard winters pass hard.
Handy. I know a lot of stories get passed around the Kurian zone about that. There's enough to eat. Sometimes it isn't what you'd like as a first choice, or even a second, but we don't starve. You'll find out there's a lot of ways to cook chickpeas, and you'll get sick of dried fruit, I can promise you that.
Women?
Wendt, that's one thing we're not short of. Fact is, there's so many, you'll find a few in uniform. There's a lot of lonely widows, too, which makes a man think, but if any of you have a mind to be a second husband, you'll have your pick. We've got schools, roads, there's a gambling boat, showboats, and I'm even told of a floating whorehouse or two on the Lake of the Ozarks. Now, being an officer and a gentleman, I wouldn't know details, naturally.
The men snickered and passed around comments under their breath like kids in school, and Valentine heard Karaska's name mentioned.
Enough of that.
The collision klaxon sounded. Something thumped against the ship's hull, a grinding jar that had everyone reaching for a table or a bunk brace to steady themselves. The squawk box fell silent. Valentine listened with hard ears, trying to shut out the bleating alarm, and heard the icy shrieks of Reapers.
My God, they follow us!
Take arms, men! Anything!
He didn't have so much as a knife on him.
Quickwood, anyone have some?
The Marines were already grabbing rifles and shotguns from the beckets in the wall of their quarters. A corporal coolly gave out bullets as the men took arms from the wall.
Sir!
Torres came running up to him with two of Post's screw-in pike points.
It'll have to do.
Post, take Wild and his team and get to the Orlikon. Ignore anything else. I don't care if she's on fire. Get that weapon manned. Irish, you and the rest of the men follow me. The forward stairs. We have to get to the bridge. Hand me that machete, Torres.
Post shoved a speed loader into a heavy .44 revolver with a trembling hand and gestured to his assigned men.
Marines, you see a Reaper, shoot until it's down if you can. They'll have the advantage up close like this. Let me get in and get its head off, or stick it with a quickwood. If I catch it, get up to Post. Any more wood down here?
Here's a pike.
Take the tip off. It's too hard to use on the pole. Ignore any wounded. Don't pay attention to anything. We go to the bridge. Now, with me.
They moved at his order into the night's chaos. Valentine rushed out into the next compartment forward and gained the stairs leading up to the main deck. A Marine caught his rifle going through the doorway and tripped, but the rest jumped over him and up the stairs in a steady stream. The compartment above opened onto the deck from doors on either side of the ship, and Valentine led his men to the door opposite from the side of the grinding collision. If he could just get them out in the open as an organized team, rather than as frightened individuals, the ship might stand a chance. The deck door on the collision side swung open, and the men brought up their guns.
Wait!
Valentine held the flat of the blade of the machete against the man behind him.
It's Owens!
A sailor made it in and slammed the door shut behind.
They're everywhere! We have to get below!
You'll come with us. Bellows and Gomez, Owens goes between you two. Come on, the rest of you.
They burst onto the port side of the ship, running for the stairs to the bridge. Shots and piercing Reaper screams filled the night. As Valentine hit the first step, a caped figure appeared at the top of the stairs.
Shoot it!
Valentine threw himself down on the stairs so the men would have a clear view. The Reaper lunged. It was blown back. Even the awesome strength in the Reaper's pounce was no match for Buckshot at close range. Then it recovered and vaulted over the rail to drop to the deck.
Gotcha, you bastard!
But Torres swiveled the mouth of his shotgun and blew it into the darkness. Valentine ducked without thinking, and a Reaper's hand cut the air where his head had been. Valentine lashed up, driving the quickwood pike point in his hand up like a striking cobra. It caught the Reaper under the arm and drove through fabric built to stop bullets, but not an old-fashioned point. Valentine felt sticky fluid hit his hand, and he got out from under the wound.
Marines!
His team was leaning over the rail to shoot at the Reaper that had blown into the sea. He had to keep them going to the bridge. He ran up the rest of the stairs. The wounded Reaper stood up, its jaws open in painful spasm, as it clawed at the quickwood point buried in its armpit. It lost its balance and sagged against the upper deck rail. Valentine paid it no more attention. Another Reaper, its back turned to him, tore at the metal door to the bridge, peeling it like a painter removing wallpaper. Valentine warned the men who joined him on the upper deck.
Aim for the face!
The Reaper whirled. Torres, just behind him, fired at the Reaper at the door, throwing it against the bridge cabin. Valentine circled as the others continued to shoot, pumping round after round into the thrashing creature. He took a good grip on the machete and gathered himself. The men stopped shooting, hurrying to reload. He dashed forward like a cricket bowler, catching it in the throat with the heavy blade. The head did not come off, but he damaged the nerve trunks and vertebra enough for it to go limp. It continued to snap at him with gleaming jaws, its yellow eyes dimming. The wound closed over the blade. Valentine left the machete wedged in its neck and went to the rail to look at the gangway below. The Kurian death machine at the back of his men had taken its toll in the seconds it took him to deal with the other. Twisted bodies and pieces of bodies lay on the deck. Three survivors fired pistols as it advanced. The Reaper used Owen's corpse as a shield. Valentine vaulted over the rail and landed behind it. It ignored his presence, continuing forward toward the Marines. Valentine took his other pike point in both hands and drove it between the thing's shoulder blades. The point struck near enough to the Reaper's heart to stiffen it instantly. The Reaper arched its back, its whole body bending like a bow, and hit the deck, still clutching Owen's bullet-riddled body. Valentine was out of Quickwood and had no time to look for the other pike point among the bodies.
Everyone to the bridge!
Irish hauled the Reaper out of the way of a damaged door. Valentine heard the welcome pounding of the Orlicon from aft. Post must have gotten it into action. He went to the starboard rail and looked over the side. Kurian sailors were taking cover as the Orlicon's fire moved up and down the deck of the submarine. Valentine saw a strange, thin smokestack at the rear of the ship. A snorkel on a submarine? Perhaps that was how it had crept up so close to the Thunderbolt without being seen. A quick rise to the surface, Reapers ready at the hatches, and all there would be to do was leap on board, an easy matter for the superhuman avatars. There was still fighting forward. Valentine heard the grog screaming and a gunshot or two from the rear.
Torres, take two men and cover the men at the Orlicon from here. They'll go for that if they get organized. Who had the other pike point?
Hurst, sir. He's dead below. I'll check.
No. Everyone stay together up here.
The bridge door opened, and Carrasca stood at the portal, a shotgun at her shoulder.
What is it?
Kurians, on the shark fin.
What do we do about the Reaper still on board? The chief says there's some of them hammering at the engine room door. They'll get through.
Tell the chief to pour it on. Let's get to the wheel.
They went to the bridge, lit by a single red bulb over the map table. The instrument lights had long since gone out and never been replaced. Valentine saw the sub making off, gathering speed as it ran. Post-Orlicon bursts riddled the stern as it sought safety beneath the waves, explosions and smoke flying from the impact of the 30-millimeter shells.
We've got to get to the main gun. What a target! The Orlicon is tearing it up!
He's just scratching its back. The real vitals are underwater. We can still get them. The prow's reinforced, you know. Icebreaker.
Jesu, if we get enough speed.
She went to the engine room squawk.
Chief, everything she's got. Maximum revolutions.
Aye, aye, sir. Do something about those bastards on the other side of the bulkhead. They tear the rivets out.
You want the wheel?
You're the better helmsman.
Carrasca took the ship into a gentle turn, letting her gain momentum.
Ramming speed, Hortader!
A grog leapt up to the bridge window. A pale arm plucked it back down. Valentine heard a thud on the roof and more shots from outside.
What's that?
Carrasca hit the collision alarm again as the Thunderbolt knifed through the water. She aimed for the conning tower, but didn't hit it square. At the last moment, the submarine must have known what was coming and turned away. The impact threw Carrasca against the wheel. Valentine hung onto the instrument panel. The Reaper on the roof of the bridge fell forward into the cannon mount. The Thunderbolt ran up and over the submarine. Valentine saw the stern of the sub burst from the water like a breaching whale.
Madre de Dios! Snapped in two!
The Reaper on the gun deck jumped from the side of the ship, plummeting into the water by the crippled sub, perhaps summoned to the aid of its master Kurian in its final need. Valentine had one more thing to do. He took Carrasca's shotgun and went to the door.
Stay here and keep the doors locked. The Reapers will be disoriented. They won't work together once their masters are dead, but they're still dangerous. Wild animals in a trap, all confusion and pain.
Valentine glanced down to the grog deck, but saw no sign of Ankh or his grogs. just bodies. Grogs, Jamaicans, and the Thunderbolt sailors were strewn in broken pieces everywhere on the deck, like mannequins run over by a tractor trailer under blood-splashed quickwood branches. He ignored the gruesome tableau and went to the starboard arms locker, where he retrieved out one of the aged machine guns. He placed a belt into the receiver and hefted the weight. It was a more suitable weapon for Anka, or a tripod, but it would have to do. Another Reaper, its form misshapen by a missing leg, jumped from the stern into the water. Valentine moved forward down to the grog deck and then up to the bow. He leaned over and winced at the damage to the front of the ship. Hopefully, just her forward compartment was flooding. The ship could absorb this kind of damage and still proceed under her own power, were she fresh from the dockyard. Was she still sound enough to float? The submarine was gone. All that remained of her on the surface was a fuel oil slick, spreading across the water like a bloodstain at a murder site. And debris. And bodies. Swimming men struggling to stay afloat amidst the floating wreckage. Valentine spotted one odd shape, a long, thin tentacle with a heavy membrane attached. A Kurian, forgetting to disguise himself in his distress. Valentine loosed a burst into the struggling form. He swung the smoking barrel to the next swimmer, an oil-coated man in white, and killed him with another burst. A heavy form floated on a life preserver, perhaps dead, perhaps faking it. Valentine could not make out the features for certain, but the hair looked as though it might belong to Captain Saunders. He fired a burst into the body, which twitched at the impact of the bullets before disappearing under the oil. Another swimmer burst through the oil, taking a deep gasp of air, having miraculously escaped the sinking sub. Valentine shot him before he could draw his second breath. The gun grew hot, and he had to slow his rate of fire. The brass casings dropped onto the deck, and hundreds lay at his feet when a hand touched his shoulder.
It's over, my David.
Oh, dear God.
Post was looking at the casings scattered on the deck. Valentine met his lieutenant's gaze, looking for understanding. Instead, he saw disgust. Post could see only pitiful figures in the wreckage being murdered for no reason. Several Kurians had to have been on board the submarine for that many Reapers to attack at once, and it would be easy for one of them to pose as a sailor. As long as the Kurians lived, the Reapers that might still be on board the Thunderbolt could kill, plant a bomb, or otherwise sabotage the ship. Valentine could no more risk a Kurian deciding to achieve a Pyrrhic victory by destroying the Thunderbolt than he could have let Alistair live back in New Orleans. Valentine tossed the gun to the deck and left the bow. Anka trailed him. Valentine was thankful for his comrade's silence. Anka would listen and give his opinion sometime in the future, but now there was too much to do. He did not look over his shoulder to see Post, but he heard him unload the gun and pick it up.
How many of your grogs are left?
A hand and two.
Anka had forgotten himself in the crisis and used Golden One phraseology for six.
It was desperate. Even with the crossbows in the quickwood, there were many of them. We hunted the last of them from the stern with the pikes. When we wounded one in the leg with a pike, it managed to tear its own limb off and escape. They've learned to fear wounds from these weapons.
So the ship is clear. Will she be able to continue?
They descended to the grog deck.
I do not know. That is for the captain and the chief to say. I was thrown off my feet by the collision, but I was below decks and saw no water. She does not seem to sink.
Post joined them on the well deck.
Mr. Post, we have to get the guns manned and ready while we're motionless. The submarine wasn't the only ship the Santo Domingans had. You'll be in charge of that. But leave me enough for a party to search the ship. Anka with his crossbow, a couple of pike men with shotguns, four should do it. We'll look for any of our people who are wounded, of course, but we have to be ready for a fight. A Reaper or two may still be holed up somewhere on board. We'll check every corner big enough to hold a dog. Once we know the ship is safe, the chief can go to work and see if she'll be able to move again. After that, we'll clean up the dead and the ship. I don't want everyone walking over bloodstains for the rest of the trip. Any questions?
Post shook his head.
No, sir. I think they already pulled up a sailor from the submarine port side, sir. Shall I shoot him, just in case?
Valentine ignored the rebuke.
Let me talk to him.
The sailor was a Cuban by birth, but his mother had been taken to Santo Domingo when she and her family were captured in a raid. He sat by the entryway, trembling and wet from head to toe, with a blanket around his narrow shoulders. Valentine's Spanish wasn't up to the dialect, so Carrasca translated his story.
I served on the Sharkfin 4 cruises as a mechanic. I had just been called forward to get gas masks because the damage from your gun was filling the engine room with smoke when the collision came. Some of the men tried to get out through the old torpedo room, but those doors long since quit working. I made it out through the forward deck hatch.
Well, stop! He's just telling us what happened to him!
Valentine had grabbed his wrist and twisted it, dropping the wretch to his knees. The prisoner was human. A Kurian's disguise would have flickered.
I'm making sure he is who he says he is. Tell him I apologize. See if he'd like to join up with us. We could use him.
The Santo Domingan sailor seemed willing. Through Carrasca, he relayed why.
The white captain of the North, he was a madman. He convinced the Kerr that if they got this ship, they could take over all the islands south of here. He promoted men he trusted, and to gain his trust, they had to treat us badly. We worked like mad and were still punished. I had planned to swim away the first chance I could get, let the Haitians castrate me, and use me as a slave in the fields. At least I would live.
What about this last trip? Who was on board?
Seigneurs from the Samana Peninsula. They had their eye on the lands west of Cape Haitian. And with this boat, they could have ruled the coast. I had no love for them. I am glad they are dead.
Valentine silently commended the dead Saunders for his final throw of the dice. With the right men under him, he would have been able to snatch the Thunderbolt away from the Hispaniolan Kurians in the manner Valentine took it away from the rulers of New Orleans. A man of strange contradictions. Long ago, he had quit asking himself why so many talented men chose to devote themselves to serving the enemies of their blood. After the ship had been searched and researched, Valentine returned to his cabin, feeling an itchy burn from the Reaper blood. He'd wiped it off quickly enough, but needed a thorough cleansing with pumice. Post was rinsing his mouth out with baking soda in their cabin. Anka had moved forward with the ship's remaining grogs.
Do you want to talk about it?
Post did him the courtesy of not playing dumb.
Sir, you've pulled this whole thing. The ship, the Quickwood, the Jamaicans and the Haitians together like a magic trick. Something out of nothing. I respect you for that. I'm not sure I can serve under you anymore. When we get to Texas, it's goodbye.
It's what happened at the bow.
I can't stop thinking about the bodies in the water, sir. When you got those Santo Domingans away from their plantations, I thought that you pretty much walked on water. Would have died for you then, if it meant accomplishing something you were trying to achieve? Never thought I'd want to die for anything, or anyone. Maybe to get away from them, but not for anything.
It took Valentine a moment to regain his equilibrium.
You shouldn't have to die for anyone. Least of all me. Risking your life, weighing it against what you're trying to do, it's something any man does.
Any man worth the iron in his blood.
But you feel differently now.
Post waited a moment, but Valentine made no gesture to hurry him. The words would come when his lieutenant was ready.
If your idea of the right thing to do is machine-gunning sailors who've had their ships sunk from under them, I want no part of it. You can cite precedents all you want. Wrong is wrong.
I had to make sure all the Kurians were dead. For all we knew, there was a Reaper squatting in the magazine with a hand grenade just in case the Thunderbolt got the upper hand in the fight. If a Kurian has his puppet pull the pin and hug a couple shells in his arms with a grenade under its chin, it's gonna do it. Sometimes it's just as dangerous to beat the Kurians as it is to run from them. They'd rather destroy than let another own something that was theirs. The Reapers were clawing through to the chief in the stern. I had to disorganize them quickly, and that's the only way I had to do it. Remember, Post, they were serving the enemy. That's war.
I was serving the enemy. As soon as you gave me a chance, I switched. I bet a lot of those sailors would have done the same as that fellow we pulled out of the water. When you were shooting them, it was like you were shooting me.
I understand. But I don't know how I'm going to get along without you. But go with my friendship. Shake on it.
His lieutenant pursed his lips, then took his hand.
Could be. You have what it takes for the kind of war this is, and I don't. Sorry, Val, but I can't see death like that again. I'm afraid I'd shoot you, or myself, or maybe both.
Drop it, Will. Serving our side's different from working for the Kurians. I'll give you your choice, and wish you well when the Thunderbolt sails away. One thing, though. Even if I did the wrong thing, the Quickwood has a better chance of getting back to Southern Command if you come with it.
Having it could turn things around, make a difference in a lot of innocent lives being saved. What happened at the bow was wrong, I'll grant you, but weigh it on the right scale. How wrong is it when a Reaper takes a 6-year-old girl because the Kurian running the show wants a different flavored aura?
That's a maybe. I'd rather deal in certainties, and those bodies floating in the diesel fuel were real, not supposition.
He turned away.
Will, if you're gonna hate me for a good reason. Ask me sometime how I became a captain in the Coastal Marines.
Post would not, or could not, see that Valentine would have preferred to rescue the shark fin survivors, but the risk to the mission, to losing all their lives, and even more time in the quest to get the Quickwood into the hands of Southern Command, required him to act as he did. Valentine had learned long ago not to second-guess himself where matters of life and death were concerned, or he would never be able to make a decision again. He had made right decisions and wrong decisions, and sometimes had to bury the bodies of those who died for no other reason than his bad judgment. Like Gabriella Cho, the night he left her alone and wounded in the confusion of a battle. Or his old company's Master Sergeant Gator, lying in a hilltop grave in eastern Oklahoma. Struggling with his own memories as much as he had with the Kurians, David Valentine went to bed.